The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum of Accelerated Government Strategies, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum from Accelerated Government Strategies, providing advisory consulting for innovative startups to help grow government revenue. Every week, Aileen and Gigi welcome Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives who are taking risks to engineer success and shape the future. Women of Washington on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now your hosts, Aileen Black and Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
Today, our guest is Donna Rice Hughes, president and CEO of Enough is Enough. To quote Oprah, Donna fights to protect children from internet dangers.
So, Donna, let's just start with your role today as the president and CEO of Enough is Enough, or EIE. Can we call it EIE?
We can.
That's easier.
Yes.
What is EIE? What's the mission of the organization?
Our mission is to make the internet safer for children and families. And we started that mission in 1994, if you can believe it, prior to email and the World Wide Web even being developed. So we were early pioneers on this issue, and here we are now 24 years later almost, and still plugging away because the dangers are still very, very real.
So 20-some years ago when you started, what dangers were you concerned about then?
The two main dangers then, we began to see black marketed pornography appearing on the bulletin board services and the news groups of the internet, and also child pornography and even infant pornography. And we also began to see conversations occurring between pedophiles and predators online. And we went, aha, the bad guys are usually steps ahead of new technology. They are the early adopters and the early exploiters. So we thought, we need to get out in front of this. And I just happened to believe that the internet was going to take off. The man I was marrying, I was engaged at the time, was in or still is in the federal government and with information technology companies. And so I knew about ARPANET. I was a great believer in the internet. And I really believed that kids were also going to be the early adopters along with the bad guys. And we needed to get out in front of the problems.
Today, our guest is Donna Rice Hughes, president and CEO of Enough is Enough, or EIE. Donna, in doing research on this, I read about how EIE advocates for strong policy and enforcement. Tell us about the landscapes of the laws that exist today to help our children.
Oh, great. That's a great question. Thank you. There are a number of laws that do exist. First of all, let me just go back to pornography. We were very involved in public policy in the 90s to try to get the existing laws that protected kids from adult pornography extended to the internet. Now, there were two attempts, both attempts, bipartisan support, but they were both struck down at the Supreme Court level. So there's no brown cyber wrapper, for instance. A child cannot go get an X-rated video or a Penthouse magazine if they're under 18, but an adult can. Now, on the internet, that barrier does not exist. However, what does exist are the obscenity laws, and that refers to hardcore pornography and also very graphic deviant material like bestiality, etc. And believe it or not, parents, I'm sorry to say, kids have access to this in large numbers, and they are accessing this kind of content. Now, that material is not protected under the First Amendment. Why is it there? Because it is not being aggressively enforced. And then, of course, the child pornography laws do apply to the internet. They are being aggressively enforced, but there just simply aren't enough resources out there to really catch the bad guys. And let me just also say, sexual predators, it is illegal for them to sexually exploit children and make contact with them over the internet for the purposes of sexual exploitation. So a lot of these laws are in place now, and but the burden really, unfortunately, still falls on the parents.
Well, Donna, that's just, as a mother of four, I just find some of this information just so alarming. Do you think the federal government is doing enough? Should we be calling our senators and congressmen?
Well, I have to say that Congress has been very responsive, both sides of the aisle, and it's been a pleasure to work with both the Republicans and the Democrats. So the problem has not been Congress. The problem has been the federal courts and then also the Department of Justice's under three or four now past administrations on not enforcing the obscenity laws, which is why obscenity is by and large mainstream porn now. And it's gotten worse and worse and worse because we've given a pass to these pornographers. And so that is certainly a big problem. There is another law that we got passed in the 90s that requires schools and libraries to filter child pornography and pornography. That law was the only one that withstood a Supreme Court challenge. However, public libraries, not all of them are abiding by that law.
So, Donna, you know, that's the Supreme Court and the federal government, right? But sometimes the law of the land and the law of public opinion can help in situations like this. So when I was researching for the show, I read about your porn-free Wi-Fi campaign. And even though I have a background in cyber, I was surprised to read some of the things that I did, which was the fact that places like a Starbucks or McDonald's, which provide free Wi-Fi, were not filtering against porn. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, thank you. As we all know, the internet keeps evolving, right? And now it's all about Wi-Fi and it's all about smartphones and basically anytime, anywhere access with a smartphone or a tablet. And so what we found out was that 3 years ago in the United Kingdom, Prime Minister Cameron led an effort to get the Wi-Fi providers as well as the businesses providing Wi-Fi and the wireless providers and the ISPs to all default filter child porn and pornography. Now, we tried this in the 90s and the internet industry said, no way. We're going to make the tools, but we're going to put the tools in the hands of the parents, hopefully, right? But parents have to turn them on or they won't work. And I'm talking about filtering and monitoring. So now the great news is that places of business that are not in the internet space but are providing the value-added service of Wi-Fi haven't thought about extending their family-friendly policies to their Wi-Fi policies. So we contacted Starbucks and McDonald's initially. Why? Because they were the first companies to go porn-free Wi-Fi in the UK, but guess where they're based? In the good old USA. And I say, congratulations on filtering overseas. You get it. You know why it's important. Will you do it here? McDonald's got back to me right away and they started looking into it. It was interesting. They had a hard time finding a provider that offered a filtered solution nationwide. They got AT&T to actually put this together for them and never heard from Starbucks. Now, we made an announcement just about a month ago that McDonald's was filtering. We knew that they were going to do it, but we wanted them to get it in place. Now, nearly 14,000 of the McDonald's restaurants are offering safe, porn-free Wi-Fi for all their customers. So the media started calling Starbucks in the corporate office and said, oh, why aren't you doing the same thing? And they went, hello, 24 to 48 hours after we made the release on McDonald's, Starbucks announced that they would now be filtering nationally and globally. So we made a huge difference. And now we're rolling this out to other venues and not just restaurants, but theme parks, airlines, for instance, shopping malls, anyone that is offering Wi-Fi to their patrons and say, look, you want it to be safe and secure for a lot of reasons. So go ahead and get on board and go friendly Wi-Fi.
So for some people who may be listening who have families, children, what is the danger if the Wi-Fi is not filtered and monitored?
Well, there are quite a number of dangers. First of all, let's just say you're the super diligent parent and you have put parental control tools on your kids' tablets and smartphones. Now they can hop onto a Wi-Fi network wherever they go. And of course, you've got wandering Wi-Fi, right? Roaming Wi-Fi, if you will. So anytime they hop onto one of these networks, now they're outside of that safe environment that you have put in place, all right? So that's one thing. The other is adults are often going to these places of business and they are jumping on these Wi-Fi networks, looking at porn, hardcore material sometimes in full view of other customers. I hear it all the time on airplanes where some guy's sitting next to somebody, their kid's around, and he's looking at some pretty raunchy stuff. And I'm not talking about your father's pornography even though that's bad enough, but really hardcore. And then Predators and sex offenders, registered sex offenders, have actually, police have told us they can go anonymously and hop on these Wi-Fi networks and go under, go stealth, so that it's very hard for law enforcement to detect them and then look at child pornography on these Wi-Fi networks.
Geez, Donna, you this whole thing just is so disturbing. I got to tell you, it happened to my niece. She was on an airplane that was fully Wi-Fi, and the gentleman next to him, she's a beautiful young lady, 18 years old, started, not only turned it on, but turned it towards her. Mm. And so you're spot on. These kinds of things can happen. In doing research, something else kind of really shocked me. It was something that I had done. I had bought one of those new Barbies that has the Wi-Fi enabled that put the video. And I read your article about Hello Barbie. You know, it's such a complex world today. You don't even know what you don't know to be concerned about. So let's talk about why Hello Barbie can be a scary thing.
Thank you. I'm so glad you asked that question. We actually developed, we being Enough is Enough, the Internet Safety 101 program with the Department of Justice a number of years ago. And we rolled it out nationally in 2010, and people always say, is that outdated? I go, no, because we're teaching the dangers. The pornographers still operate the same way. Their kids can accidentally get this material, and there's lots of ways that pornographers trick people, including adults. The predators still act the same way, all right? Cyberbullying now has become really big with social media. Now we have interactive technology that we didn't used to have in the early days. And so all of these dangers and all of these issues really haven't changed that much. It's just they've morphed into new opportunities, like with apps and that kind of thing. So let's just go back to the Hello Barbie example. For a very long time, we have been cautioning parents about letting their kids get on webcams and being careful about that. Now, so what is Hello Barbie? It's basically just a webcam inside the Barbie. All right. So if you understand that now, let's just say there's some new toy down the road that has a webcam and you understand why webcams can be dangerous and why you should probably turn them off, at least for younger kids. And I would even say up to, you know, at least high school and responsible teenagers, because not all teens are responsible. OK, so you really have to kind of, you know, figure out how you're going to do Internet safety with each one of your kids, because that can vary. So Hello Barbie is just simply, I don't even think Mattel thought about it, unfortunately. And I think parents oftentimes just assume that a technology or that a toy or even a smartphone is going to be safe. And that is just simply not true. And like you said, you don't know what you don't know until you find out that you didn't know it. And then you go, oh, my gosh. And then you may have a real problem. So our work is all about prevention. And that's what the Internet Safety 101 program is about. And I do hope your listeners who are parents and grandparents will actually get that. It is on Vimeo now. We won an Emmy for the TV portion of that. And there's a workbook, and it's, and a lot of it's for free on the Internet as well.
Where can they get more information about that? Do you have a website?
We do. We've got three websites, but I'll give you the main one for Internet Safety 101, and it's internetsafety101.org. You can also go to enough.org as well, and just go to the store, and you'll learn a lot more about that.
Today, our guest is Donna Rice Hughes, president and CEO of Enough is Enough. Coming up, we'll hear about Donna's early career. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, our guest is Donna Rice Hughes, president and CEO of Enough is Enough. So, Donna, we'll talk later more about your career, but I want to take a turn back for a moment. Let's start at the beginning of your journey. Let's begin with your background. Tell us, where did you grow up and a little bit about your family?
Well, I am a true Southerner. I was born in New Orleans, spent a little bit of time in Tallahassee, Florida, and ended up in the fifth grade in Columbia, South Carolina. And there I went through high school and the University of South Carolina, and I graduated in 1980. I'm sorry, I just told my age. Okay, just had my 40-year high school reunion this weekend, I have to say. But so from South Carolina, I consider that my home, and have been living in Virginia now for quite some time. I've been married 23 years, And when I graduated from school, I graduated with a major and a minor. Biology pre-med was my primary focus, and business was my secondary focus, primarily because I just simply couldn't make up my mind. And but I really did feel like that I had big dreams. Let me just say that. Had big dreams and vision for making a difference. And so that was very important to me. But then, you know, there weren't a lot of mentors, and we didn't have, you know, cable news. We didn't have, you know, all these opportunities now that young people have where they can just get inspired. They go, hey, I'd like to cook. I could actually be a chef. And that's a really cool thing to do. We didn't have those things. So we were kind of, you know, pioneering our way, weren't we?
And did you have any big influences? I mean, virtually all the women we interview say, you know, there was this teacher, my parent, my grandparent, that really helped me realize my potential or where I could, you know, eventually, you know, pursue a career. Did you have somebody like that that influenced your life early on?
I can't really say. I will say that both my grandmothers were entrepreneurs. My mother's mother was a caterer. And she would do 2 to 3 weddings a week sometimes, and made the cakes and made all the food out of her little home on a farm in South Carolina. My other grandmother was a college graduate and was a home economics professor. And so I think that they both really influenced me a lot. My own mother was wonderful. She was a secretary, but she never really understood my ambition. She said, why don't you just get a job at the post office? And I'm like, no offense against the post office, but I think I would really pull my hair out. I had an entrepreneurial spirit as well, and I think I got that from my grandmother's.
So, Donna, you went, as you mentioned, to the University of South Carolina. And by the way, to make you feel better, you and I are the exact same age. We both graduated in 1980. And you said you had trouble deciding what you wanted to major in, and so you were kind of a double major for bio and business. What were you thinking you were going to do? What was your plan, to go on to med school after that point? And did you do that?
Well, I had thought I would go to medical school, and I wanted to. I worked as an emergency medical technician and spent a lot of time in the hospitals, again, trying to figure it out. One summer I was an EMT. Another time I was, you know, worked in a hospital. Another time I was a summer missionary. And I was just really, I was a Christian, and I was seeking God's path for my life. But I just didn't have any real clarity. And also, my parents did not encourage me to go to medical school, which is kind of interesting, but they didn't. And that was kind of a new thing for girls back then. But my biology teacher said, you're number 2 in the whole school in biology, and you could go anywhere you wanted. Or where anywhere you want, but I didn't go. I decided I would just take a year off. I went to New York. I actually became Miss South Carolina in the Miss World pageant, and nobody's ever heard of that, and that's okay. But it got me to New York. It was my ticket to New York. But I had been making TV commercials since I was in the 9th grade and doing a lot of modeling and that sort of thing. And so I thought, hey, I'm just going to try my hand at this and see what happens. So I ended up in New York.
When you were in that last year, when you graduated and you went to New York, you had a pretty traumatic experience. I watched a video interview of you, and you were date raped.
Yes, and it was actually just after I had graduated, and I was on my way to New York. And it was with someone that I had, it was an older guy that I'd gone out with a few times, and my boundaries were not what they should have been. But I lost my virginity, and I think that those two things combined were quite devastating to me. And I didn't share that with anyone, but I did feel like I was used goods. I will tell you that, because I was saving myself for marriage. And that was my goal. That's how I've been raised. So I went to New York with that just having happened, and then started making some pretty lousy choices when it came to guys. And so if the bad boys were definitely attracted to me, and I was attracted to them.
So I read somewhere, Donna, that you said that you made a series of small wrong turns. Is that what you mean by that?
Yes. Oftentimes people say, well, how did a nice Southern girl with those, you know, good, solid Christian roots that graduated Phi Beta Kappa and had all this going for her end up in the middle of this big mess, which I'm sure we're going to talk about here quite soon. And I say, well, you don't just go from A to Z overnight. It's usually a series of little left turns. My husband calls them little left turns or little compromises. And before you know it, you can be way off path, off that path. And this is why I think friends are so important. Mentors are so important. And for me, having a good, solid foundation of faith. And when I went off to New York, I lost a lot of that and I didn't keep it. And now we're so transient, our younger generations. And that's one of the things I would say would be so important. If you're leaving home or you're moving as a young single person from one place to another, get an infrastructure around you, a faith community, if you're a person of faith, for one, mentors. And now we don't have to worry about long distance calls. We did then. So we couldn't do all of that. But now you can stay in touch through video, through Skype, through phone calls, and that kind of thing. And then find, you know, new friends and have some accountability structures.
Today, our guest is Donna Rice Hughes, president and CEO of Enough is Enough. Coming up, we'll ask Donna about making personal pain count for something bigger. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, our guest is Donna Rice Hughes, president and CEO of Enough is Enough.
Donna, we talked about you moving to New York and modeling, and at the same time, I believe you also worked as a pharmaceutical sales rep for a pharmaceutical company. But at 29, you ended up losing that job after a really big scandal broke out about you and Gary Hart. So tell us about that time of your life.
Yes, I was 29 years old. And at the time, I was living in Florida. I had moved from New York to Fort Lauderdale initially and then on to Miami. And that's when I started working for the pharmaceutical company. It was the perfect job for me because I didn't have to go to an office every day. And I called on doctors and had this fabulous territory from North Miami all the way down to South Beach. And then South Beach was nursing homes. And it was just this beautiful thing. But I could also go on auditions. And so I did quite a lot of television work at that time, as well as kept this great job. So, but I was also still off track as far as my faith goes. And, you know, if folks were looking at me from the outside, they would just say, oh, you know, typical all-American, ambitious girl doing well in two careers, etc. But I knew I was off the beaten path of my own foundation of faith, I will say, as a believer. And when I was about 29 years old, that you're right, that's when this big scandal happened. And it's what actually happened is much different than what was reported. But I will tell you that I ended up in the middle of this thing and was just absolutely devastated. As it turned out, a couple of girls I had trusted had called the Miami Herald to have me followed to see Senator Hart. At the time when I first met him, I didn't know he was married. That's no excuse, but I didn't. And I saw him on a couple of occasions. And then this big scandal happened. He got out of the race eventually. And my name and my likeness was spread around the whole world because that campaign actually released my name. And of course, I've been a model. So all these pictures started coming out of everywhere. And the media descended on me and on my family in South Carolina, my sweet mom, who initially thought it was kind of interesting because the first big story was in the New York Times that said beauty, brains, and talent. She had it all. And it was a nice little picture of me. So mom invited the reporters in for sweet tea. And within about a week or two, it had turned pretty bad. And my reputation was completely torn apart, as you can imagine. This was way before the Monica Lewinsky's for the younger millennials who weren't even born yet. But it was the first, because this was the first time, first of all, that the media had gotten into the private life of a politician. So that was the first. No one knew how to handle that. The media was out of control. So this wasn't tabloid journalism. This was mainstream media that had gone tabloid. And it was also the first time that a young woman had been in that kind of a situation, too. So it was very hard to know what to do and how to handle it while you watched your life being ripped apart.
Donna, you were, you know, clearly a pioneer when it comes to living through scandal. I mean, most scandals like this break people. And when you look today, people have begun to learn how to recover. And again, I think they look to some of the things that you did as examples, like Michael Phelps and many other Olympians or like you brought up Monica Lewinsky have come through this and mm-hmm. some stronger.
Yeah.
But you came through stronger without a whole lot of role models before you. What gave you that strength?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. Very early on, I was just so devastated. Everything I had put my confidence in, which was my reputation, the success that I had as a professional and also as a student, that was all just ripped apart. But what I did have was the foundation of my faith. And so my grandmothers and my mother kept saying, get your life straight with God. And I'm like, what's God got to do with it? I'm being chased around by crazy media people and people are selling me out left and right. And but they were right. And so I did. And I said, God, I don't know what you're going to do. I don't know how you're going to deal with this, but I know that you're bigger than this mess that I have been very much a part of making, even though it's all been blown up into this big scandal. And I want all of this to count for something. I want the pain to count for something. And there hasn't been a girl that's gone through anything like this who has come out on the other side. And I was being told at the time that your credibility is ruined. You will never be taken seriously ever. So take the money and run. And I was offered millions and millions and millions of dollars. And not to take my clothes off, even that did I was offered that money too. But just to tell the truth. It got to the point where I was offered blank checks just to say what happened. And I chose not to do it for a lot of different reasons that we don't have time to go into today. But one is I wanted to be known for who I was, and I wanted to be taken seriously. And I chose to take the high road because I believe that that was the path to success and to victory and to overcoming this mess and to not return evil for evil.
Now, when I shared with you off air, I've become a huge fan of yours. I think every young person could learn from it. Let's go back to the internet today. I saw a quote where you said there's no take backs with sexting. And today's social media, sometimes, you know, it may not even just be the outside media that actually causes you great pain without really realizing that left turn you're taking, but at the hands of some of the 20-somethings that are very social media savvy and very active can be setting themselves on a course that they can't return from. Do you have any advice to people like that?
Oh, absolutely. Well, first of all, we do have to realize with the internet that really nothing is private. There is a lot of, there is anonymity, but nothing's truly private. One of the first things, though, if you're using social media, most people are, I am, is to keep your profile set to private. But remember, anytime you post anything, that even if it's in a private area, somebody else can share it and they can repost it. So nothing's truly private. So be careful. Don't put anything up there that you wouldn't want your grandmother to see and that you wouldn't want your worst enemy to see. All right. Now, when it comes to sexting, just a really, really bad idea. In fact, I wrote a pretty scathing letter to Cosmopolitan, and I don't normally do that kind of thing, but they had an article on how to send the perfect sext. I'm like, really? Young girls are reading your magazine, even though their mothers may not know that, and you're saying how to send the perfect sext. Sexting is not a good idea. And if you're under 18 years old, what you're really effectively doing legally is creating what the law calls child pornography. Now, should a young person be convicted of that? There's a lot of debate about that. But that's what's happening. And if you share nudity and sexted pictures or videos of somebody under 18, you can be accused and actually convicted of sharing child pornography and distributing it. So it's just a bad idea. And for everybody who's, you know, over 18 or what have you, again, there are no take backs. So you have to think twice. What is the long-term consequence of this? Is this a wise decision now? And is this something down the road that I will consider to have been wise? And if the answer is not yes, then just don't do it.
Today, our guest is Donna Rice Hughes, president and CEO of Enough is Enough. Coming up, we'll find out how Donna balances it all. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, our guest is Donna Rice Hughes, president and CEO of Enough is Enough. Donna, before we start talking to you about how you balance and have it all, I got to go back to what we were talking about earlier. On your website, when I was doing research, I read something about the presidential pledge, and we were talking about egos and this election and sort of like the future leaders of our country. Tell us a little bit about the presidential pledge and why all of us should care about it.
Thank you. Yes. Just recently, we sent the Children's Internet Safety Presidential Pledge to all of the remaining presidential candidates running for president, obviously. And what we asked them to do was to, if elected president, to do a number of things. To agree to enforce all of the existing federal laws designed to prevent the sexual exploitation of children. What are those? The obscenity laws. I mentioned that earlier in the show, that the obscenity laws have not been aggressively enforced at all. Some under John Ashcroft, but since that time, nothing. Nothing under Obama. And this needs to be a priority because much of the hardcore material on the internet is prosecutable. And the United States is the top producer of hardcore material, both in video and on the web. So that needs to stop. And also more aggressively fund and provide resources for the child pornography laws and the sexual predation laws and also trafficking. A lot of people don't realize, but all of this, the whole sex industry, whether it be trafficking, prostitution of children and child pornography, it's all wrapped up together. There's a cycle of abuse. One feeds the other. And we do now know from peer-reviewed science that hardcore pornography is fueling trafficking, is fueling violence against women, and is fueling the exploitation of children. Kids themselves are getting highly addicted to this content. So, and the other piece of that is to provide greater oversight for some of the existing laws, like the Children's Internet Protection Act that requires libraries to filter. So we're asking them upfront to make that commitment. And in the pledge that you can find at enough.org, you will see all the background data because it's all backed by peer review science. So we actually got within a couple of weeks of sending out the pledge, we got the signed pledge back from Donald Trump, which we were so excited about. And we also got a response from Hillary Clinton's campaign, and they said that they fully supported the goals of the pledge, but that they had a policy against signing pledges. So we said, okay, well, we'll take that. We wish you'd sign it, but, you know, we'll take that. So that's what the pledge is about. And now we have asked citizens to take their own pledge and to agree to do what they can do to protect the children in their lives and other people's children on the internet from all these dangers. And we've got all the safety tips of how to do that and what you need to do as a parent or a grandparent. And the other thing we're going to do is provide those citizens' pledges to the candidates and let them know that this is important, because the reality is that internet safety is now the fourth biggest health concern for children. Sexting is number six. All right. So these are big issues. And I personally believe that we need to be talking about these kinds of issues, just like we're talking about the economy, just like we're talking about borders and immigration and defense and everything else.
So, Donna, that is really compelling. And it just sums up your passion around this area, which you've also made your career. So let me ask the question to segue to the next kind of topic here. You have had a wonderful career, right? You've had a fantastic career, but you also have a family. You've got children, you've got grandchildren, and we know that we have a lot of younger listeners to this show who are just coming up and having families of their own. What advice, how did you manage it all? Because you work, your husband work, you've got kids. How did you balance everything out?
Well, I can tell you, I probably made more mistakes than I made good choices, and I learned along the way a lot. And you're right, I have two stepchildren that are grown now and three grandchildren. And balance is not easy, particularly for women. It's very, very hard. And for me, I think keeping grounded in my faith is so important. I begin each morning in the Word of God and with a devotion, just getting centered and getting my head on straight. And also praying for my family. That's really important. The other is having good accountability. Having people in your lives, both professionally and personally, that will speak the truth and love to you, and that they don't have to be yes people. You know, if I'm off course or I'm thinking the wrong way about something, I want somebody to give me a little correction there. And I would say the same thing with mentors, having good, strong mentors, people that you can look to. And those mentors may be different. Like, I have different mentors and people that are role models for me, in, for instance, in the workplace, that are different than in other areas of life, that than as a parent or as a model wife. And that's okay. There isn't just a one-size-fits-all when it comes to a role model or a mentor.
And we usually on this show talk a lot about mentoring, but you've had such a busy life that we haven't gotten around to it. But I will ask you one question. What's the best advice that you've ever gotten from a mentor?
Oh, my goodness. I've gotten so much advice from mentors. One of my mentors, who's an older lady, is still a dear, dear friend. Her name is Mary, and she's local. She always would say, the greater the devastation, the greater the restoration. And I needed to hear that when my life was broken. And I would say this to anyone out there, if you've made a mistake or something horrible has happened to you, or if you're even facing like a cancer diagnosis or something like that, make a decision to learn from it, make a decision to grow from it, and to do your best to keep a positive attitude.
Today, our guest is Donna Rice Hughes, President and CEO of Enough is Enough. So, Donna, tell us, what's next?
Oh, my. Well, what is next? That's a good question. I really thought when I started with this work with making the internet safer for children that we were going to check that box and have a safe internet many years ago. And here we are still, you know, pioneering new things. And so I believe that will continue, because now I'm at the ripe old age of 58. I'm a matriarch in this space. And so, but I do want to write a book. I've been writing it off and on for many years, but I think it's time now. You know, I wanted to turn full circle before I did, but I have had some full circle experiences, many of them now. And so I plan to do that, and then we'll see what's next. I really enjoy doing media. I love it. I love what you ladies do. This is fun, isn't it?
It's a lot of fun.
It is fun. It is. It's a blessing to be able to meet the wonderful women, including yourself. So we heard a lot about the time in your early career where you had faced such adversity, and as you said it, your life was broken. How about as you were working and trying to kind of make it all work with a career and a husband and a family, were there tough choices or occasions where you really had to make a decision between work and family or take a zigzag in your career to make everything work?
Well, I continued to work for a lot of reasons. When you run a nonprofit, there's a lot more to do than you've got time or money to do. And it's not like you can just go out and hire someone if you need someone, because the resources may not be there. And what happens oftentimes with leaders in nonprofits, you end up wearing about 10 hats. And so it was hard to ever take breaks. And both my parents got sick, and they lived in South Carolina. And I did take a little time, but probably not as much as I should have. To keep the organization going. I would say this, there was a lady, and I don't even know who it was, but she interviewed people like on their deathbed, and they all had the same regrets. And one of them was that they wished they had spent more time with their families. And so I can say that too. I can. And just next week, we're going to see our kids and three grandchildren. And I'm already thinking, okay, I can squeeze in an interview here. I can do a phone call here. And I'm having to kind of stop myself and say, wait a minute. This is grandkid time. And they get me first. And that's not easy to do all of the time. And so I'm trying to remember those good words of wisdom, that it really is about family and pouring into the lives of those who are in your life. And that doesn't mean you can't have a career. I think you can, but figuring out what is right for you and then setting those boundaries and sticking to them as best you can.
Donna, it's been a pleasure. It's been an amazing story to hear about your journey. I got to ask you, though, if you were to go back in time and see the Donna that was, you know, leaving for New York, what advice would you give her in today's world to land in such a good place you did?
Well, that's a great question. I believe that young people just leaving school, college, are in one of the most vulnerable positions of any demographic. That's just my personal opinion. So I would say, what is your foundation and stick to it? Have good accountability in your life with good friends. Now, with media and internet, your friends can travel with you, even if they're not physically with you. And if you are moving and getting out of your hometown and that sort of thing, find new sets of friends who have the same values that you do, and pick your mentors wisely, just like pick your friends wisely. This is so important because bad company can corrupt good character. That is a proverb. And I would say to any young person, whether you're a person of faith or not, one of the smartest things you can do is read the Proverbs of the smartest man who ever lived. And that is King Solomon. And if you can stick to those, you won't go wrong.
Today, our guest was Donna Rice Hughes, President and CEO of Enough is Enough. Donna, thank you so much for sharing your inspirational story with us today.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies. Great to be with you.
I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum, founders of Accelerated Government Strategies. Learn more about AGS and the work they do to help accelerate your business plans for public sector at excelgovstrat.com. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington, Wednesday afternoons at 1 on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.